to our next guest. Like I said, he promised to build up his reputation yesterday and destroy it today. So please be kind. It's a measure of strength to be able to take effective criticism. So on that note, Nylander Aid.
Okay. Yeah, back after the rook pool, maybe after half an hour of this, you'll wish that's where we ended it. So today I'm going to be talking about incentives, about security, and about what I think we should improve in Bitcoin Cash and in Bitcoin by extension. I just want to start off by saying I like Bitcoin Cash. I hold some Bitcoin Cash, but I do think there are some things that we need to start looking into more, and that's what I'll talk about today. So when we talk about security and about incentives, what we really mean, of course, is what is the risk of a 51% attack? Like, the big risk vector that we have is if one actor gets 51% hash rate, they can attack the network. There's different things they can do. They can do, for example, a double spend if they have that much hash rate, which kind of goes against the whole decentralization aspect, right? Like, if someone does a double spend, that kind of disproves all we've been talking about. But the way we can profit from a double spend is pretty limited because, yes, you can send funds to an exchange. You can then revert the transaction pretty much, make a small profit out of it. But it's not going to be such a big profit that it's actually worth it to try and accomplish this because you do need to get your hands on a lot of hash rate to do this, which is expensive. So double spend is the one that we all know about, but it's not the actually scary one, I think. So the scary one is, let's say an entity gets 51% hash rate, I get 51% hash rate. What I start doing right now is I start building my own chain. And in my own chain, all I do is mine empty blocks. The only thing that's in the blocks is the block reward, which is going to me. I do this for a full day. After the full day, I publish my chain, I broadcast it, we roll back a full day of transactions, and I keep mining empty blocks. Now, I would say that really hurts the network, right? Like, especially in Bitcoin, which sort of prides itself on store of value, decentralized store of value, uncensorable everything. If this ever happens, this is a huge hit to Bitcoin. Similar for Bitcoin Cash, if all the transactions of a full day are rolled back and you cannot transact on the network indefinitely, everyone is fully censored, that's a major hit, I think, to the trust in either of these coins. Now, it's still an expensive attack to pull off, right? I think, like, I'll get to that, but it's expensive. So how do you profit from this? You can go short on Bitcoin and also on Bitcoin Cash. I got this beautiful BCH bull with a bear. You can also go short on Bitcoin Cash. Of course, on Bitcoin Cash, the amounts are pretty low for which you can go short. So it's hard to make this profitable. But on Bitcoin, there is a huge secondary market where you can go long or you can go short. The perpetual market on Bitcoin, or sorry, on crypto, is about $600 billion in open interest. Most of that is Bitcoin. So you can actually take out a very big position where if the price goes down, you profit because you are short the coin, just like in BCH Bull. It's not just perpetuals, it's also futures, options, other derivatives that you can use to go short. So that's sort of the attack scenario, right? Now there's hopefully, I think you all are thinking there's a lot of nuances to this because first of all, you have the very small task of getting your hands on all the ASICs, like enough to attack the chain. That is quite an expensive endeavor, which I'll go into. You also have the energy cost or electricity cost to run this while you're doing the attack. The second one is actually not that big a deal. Electricity cost for this is like very low. Let's say you attack Bitcoin. The network has a $2,000 billion market cap. The energy cost to run the miners a full day is like 40, 50 million for a single day. So it's like we can kind of ignore that for the cost of the attack just because buying up the ASICs is the hard part. There's also an alternative to buying up all the ASICs. You can like coerce, bribe, or hack miners. I won't focus on that too much unless I have more time. So we'll just focus on how do you actually get your hands on enough hash rate. And can you do a short successfully? Okay, so what plays into this is the security budget issue, which I think is being talked about more recently. What the security budget issue is we pay miners in block rewards, every 4 years, of course, we have a halving, as everyone here knows, which means that the block reward that we pay is going down. Now, of course, the price can go up. So then you could say in dollar terms, it's still exactly the same. But what actually matters is the ratio. So every halving, what we do, let's say first we have 10 billion in miner revenue and a 1,000 billion market cap. If the price doubles to 2,000 billion in market cap for Bitcoin, let's say, or Bitcoin Cash, the rewards that the miners are earning, the security budget that we have, stays at 10 billion because it gets halved at a halving, right? Now, what this means, you can see the slide or the graph on the right. It means that our security budget as a percentage of the market cap keeps decreasing over time. So for every dollar in market cap, we're spending less and less to secure it. And this just keeps on going every 4 years. Now, because for a short, what is important is the cost to attack to get your hands on all the ASICs. And for that, it matters how much the miners are earning. And the other part that matters is the market cap, or like how much can you profit from a short. So what we see every 4 years, this becomes more attractive. Now, just summarizing mostly for myself, because I was making this during the night pretty much. With 51% hash rate, I think we all agree you can do a lot of damage. This damage probably means that the price will go down by a lot. If you can prove the chain is insecure, not decentralized, price goes down. You can profit from that with a short, and this is becoming more attractive over time due to the halvings, due to security budget decreasing. Now, all of you are hopefully thinking fees, right? Because block reward goes down, as Callisti was saying, in 20 years, we'll have very high volume or no volume. The thinking is we can replace this security budget. We can replace the block rewards with fees. In Bitcoin, not practical. I think we all kind of agree it doesn't work. But in BCH, we can scale enough to actually do lots of transactions. So I tried to run the math on it. We currently have 0.4 cents per transaction as an average. I think long term, we kind of want 1 cent per transaction on average to stay sort of easy to use, right? If we assume a very happy world in which Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash swap in market cap, everyone here will be very happy, I think. What then happens at the next halving to make up for the decrease in block rewards is that we would need an additional 4.1 billion transactions on Bitcoin Cash per day, which I think currently we're at 30,000-ish. I don't know, Callisti probably knows better. Bitcoin itself is at about 300,000. So I'm very optimistic on the future, but I think 4.1 billion, like five orders of magnitude increase, I think it's a bit like hand-waving the issue away, right? It's like, yes, we will have global adoption and then this works. Would be nice if we get there, but I think it's kind of a flimsy future to like build your security on. Of course, also you can play with the numbers, by the way. So if we have 1 cent per transaction, it's less than 4.1 billion. But to add some context, Visa, MasterCard, American Express, JCB, Diners, and UnionPay all combined do about 2 billion transactions per day. So saying that we do 4.1, I find that sort of optimistic, let's say. Okay, so then what matters for this attack is how much does it cost you to get your hands on the hash rate? So how many ASICs do we need to buy? Where do we buy them from? How do we get them? Now, because Bitcoin mining has gotten so big, there are lots of public companies who do this. They are listed on the stock exchanges. They have a market cap, which really helps for calculations. So we have Marathon Digital Mining. They are the biggest miners, I believe. They have 6% of the hash rate, and their market cap is actually 5.5 billion. Now you would say, okay, easy. We can do 5.5 billion for 6% of hash rate. 100% of the hash rate is roughly 100 billion. Very easy calculation. Except Marathon's market cap of 5.5 billion, they hold 5 billion in Bitcoin. So if we adjust for it, because like every time the Bitcoin price moves up or down, you see their market cap going up or down, and then you see like 500 million added for their mining operations pretty much. So the actual market cap of their mining operations, not just them as a proxy for the Bitcoin price, is about 500 million. If we then do the math, that means 100% of ASICs would cost 8.3 billion, very low. That said, we can also look at other miners. Riot is big, CleanSpark is big, Hut 8 is big. Not all of these have Bitcoin on their balance sheet, so for some it's even simpler to do this comparison, and you get different cost sort of estimates. I added in Hut 8 because for them the estimate's actually a bit higher than the rest. I tried to not be too biased. So for most estimates, it's like 10 to 40 billion to buy up 100% of the ASICs. There will probably be some premium, right, if you buy all of them up. But all of these are just public companies. So if you can offer them like 50% over their current price, like most investors will be quite happy. But we also checked it, or I also checked it with just ASICs. So if you were to buy up the best ASIC on the market today, me as an individual, I would pay a certain price. I just multiplied that to get like the necessary hash rate. It would cost you $18 billion. It's a very rough estimate, of course, because you need like you need a place to host them, you need to ship them, all kinds of stuff. But also on the other hand, if you want to buy that many ASICs, you'll get a discount. Which kind of brings me to my next point. Because yes, security budget is already challenging, but we also have centralization over time in these miners. So I was showing the big miners, Marathon, Hut 8, Riot, whatever. Hut 8 actually recently merged with US Bitcoin. And the reason they do these mergers is that they have economies of scale. The bigger the miners get, the lower their costs are for every mined Bitcoin. So that's not just me saying it. It's like lots of research saying it, but also they very proudly announce it in all of their public statements. So when they were talking about this merger, they were saying, okay, this is great because it reduces our administrative expenses per Bitcoin and we can get even better discount deals on buying the ASICs. We have cheaper capital. It's like all kinds of reasons that they can produce Bitcoin more cheaply than just a small miner. Now, the issue with this is that this just keeps worsening over time, right? Because the big miners make more profit, they can reinvest more, and we've kind of already been seeing this. And I don't mean like mining pools, those are obviously also centralizing, but just the big miners themselves, they keep getting bigger. If you look like 5 years back, it was far more spread out than it is now. We didn't have like Marathon with 6% all by themselves, and just a few US Bitcoin miners adding up to like 20% or something. Now, why this is risky, why this is bad for the attack that I was talking about, is the fewer entities that you need to talk to buy up or bribe or coerce or something, the easier this gets, right? Instead of going out to all these different miners, you have like a few central ones that you can talk to, you can buy them out. And this also keeps getting easier over time. So we have like two different vectors in which this is getting easier over time. It's actually a third one, if I get to it. But what this actually comes down to is that the incentives are just very messed up. Like the incentive for miners is to keep getting bigger. Their incentive is to centralize. It's the opposite of what we want as users, as holders, because we want a decentralized network, right? But we also have a sort of clash of incentives in another way, because a miner doesn't necessarily care about Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash. They care about the income stream that it gives them. They don't need to hold the coin. They just want to, you know, mine the coin, sell it for USD, pay their suppliers, and hopefully get a small profit. So they're not that incentivized into the system. They just want to extract as much as possible for as long as possible, and it's us paying for it in inflation, in fees, like you have to pay in some way for them to be able to mine. So just summarizing the problem, you can mine empty blocks, you can short, because if you mine empty blocks, if you roll back the chain, it's going to hurt the price immensely. It's sort of disproving the entire basis of crypto, of Bitcoin Cash, of Bitcoin. We can approximate the cost by looking at public miners. We can approximate how much you can make from this by looking at the market cap, by looking at the financialization, like the derivatives, the shorts, all that kind of stuff. At the same time, it's becoming increasingly attractive because the security ratio is decreasing and we have decentralization over time. Now, like in case I haven't made it clear enough, I am very concerned about this problem. I have been for quite a while. I was in Bitcoin fairly early on. The reason I'm no longer holding that much in Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash is actually this. I just don't believe in the long-term future as long as we have this proof of work. If you can attack a coin for say 50 billion as a higher estimate, even go higher than that, and you can make way more than that from a short, there are many parties that will want to do so at some time. It could be investors, it could be miners themselves. They don't make that much profit. There's just a few of them. They can decide, okay, let's collaborate, you know, burn the value of our ASICs because we have this one-time payoff of like tens or hundreds of billions by doing this. So people have been thinking about solutions, and here are a few that I've come up with, or no, not that I've come up with, actually. The thing is, please, like, keep the solutions separate from the problem. I don't want to say these are the perfect solutions. It's just the ones that I think kind of make sense. But I also think the problem is super important, and we should focus on whether we think this is a real problem. And then, you know, hopefully we can agree to start thinking about solutions. Anyway, a tail emission. It's been talked about a lot in Bitcoin, or recently has been getting talked about. I think we all know the idea. Instead of a decreasing security budget because of the halvings, we just keep the block rewards as they are now. What that means is the security budget stays roughly equal, even without fees. We don't have to think about it. But there are some downsides, of course. Like, you get rid of the fixed supply, which we probably all quite like. It makes it less attractive, right, as an investment or as a store of value, because now you're getting inflated away constantly. The other issue is it doesn't actually solve the issue, because we still have this attack vector of trying to get 51% hash rate and going short. It's just the question, how expensive do you make it? And we also have not solved decentralization over time. So it's not really a true solution. We can also increase adoption. Obviously, good idea to do anyway, right? Like, we want to see more adoption. But yeah, for me, the numbers just don't really add up yet. And also, the higher the market cap gets in, like, whatever fantasy scenario we do, the more transactions we actually need. So 4.1 is already, like, 4.1 billion, already a pretty high count of transactions, but the number could be far higher that we would need. So I think that can sort of help with the problem, but it doesn't solve it. So what I am proposing, and I'll hide behind these chairs, is to consider moving to proof of stake. Because, exactly, I've got a pointer. Because by doing so, proof of stake has never, that I know of, successfully been 51% attacked. In proof of work, we have quite some examples of a successful 51% attack. Why does it not happen in proof of stake? Because, first of all, it's incredibly expensive. Most of the estimates that we've, like, looked into for Bitcoin, it's like 50 billion is a pretty high estimate, but let's say even 100 billion to attack it. If you want to buy up half of all outstanding Bitcoin, even half of all outstanding Bitcoin Cash, it's very expensive. In the case of Bitcoin, the low estimate is like half of the current price, $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Of course, once you start buying it up, the price goes up even more, right? So getting your hands on 51% is very expensive to do, makes it very hard to do. But also, once you've bought up 51%, if you do an attack, the person you hurt is yourself. Unlike with hash rate, where you don't need to be invested in the network, you just need to have this hash rate outside of the network. In proof of stake, you need to be invested in the network. Now, I think many of you will probably agree that it still does have centralization and that there are many downsides to proof of stake, but, like, the big will keep getting bigger. It's hard for small players to stake. You have to lock up funds, and most people cannot afford to lock up their funds. You just get your income and you spend it again. So it has many issues. So what I'm proposing is a modified version of proof of stake. And I'll walk through my reasoning, and then people can shout at what they sort of recognize this as. I would propose that we remove fees and we remove inflation, because they are the core of the problem of centralization. So if you have proof of work or proof of stake, as long as you have rewards, there will be people fighting over the rewards, and the big will always be able to get more rewards than the small ones. It, like, just keep that going over time, and it's centralization all the way down, like, constantly, every year again. If you don't have fees, if you don't have inflation, there is no reward going to the big players. They are not getting bigger, at least not in the network itself, because there's nothing being paid out to them. Right now, we incentivize centralization in the network, in the consensus. And by doing this, by removing fees and inflation, we remove that incentive. Now, I think we would all, like, if we have a proof of stake coin and we're not getting paid to stake, no one does it, right? Because I'm not locking up my funds, like, you do it, right? I want security, but I don't want to be the one that cannot access my money or takes some sort of risk. So the question becomes, who would stake? Now, what if we could make it so that you don't have to lock up your funds? You can just, in your wallet, you can choose who you want to stake with. So instead of needing to set up your own node, instead of locking your funds, just check in your wallet, like, okay, what are some smaller stakers? Cool, I'll stake with them. I'll delegate with them. You don't actually have to make it so that the funds leave your wallet. You can just make it so that you vote for a specific validator for a staker without ever giving up control of your coins. But then the question is, who runs the nodes, right? Because yes, I'll delegate to someone, but I don't want to run a node. It's going to cost me money. So just a quick show of hands. Are there people here that run nodes in any crypto whatsoever? Okay, and can you put down your hand if you do this only because you're a miner? Okay, that's actually quite some hands still, which makes sense to me. Like, we also run a node on Nano, on Bitcoin, on Litecoin. We run a bunch of nodes because we're a merchant on all of those networks, and we need to have direct access to the network. I assume for Celine, you run a node, right? Because you want direct access to the network. So even without any reward paid out to nodes, we have plenty of nodes because people just need to run a node to access the network for their business. There's also probably individuals who run a node just because they like the network or because you hold a lot of the coin. As long as we have sufficient people running nodes, there's a lot of choice for you, even if you don't want to run your own node, to decide who you want to stake with or who you vote for in this system. And now, let's say you hold 10,000 BCH, but you don't want to run your own node, and you can choose who you want to stake with. Are you going to stake with an entity that already has 10% of the total voting weight or staking power, whatever you want to call it? No, right? Because you want the network to be decentralized, because that's what gives it value. You hold BCH, so you want the network to remain valuable. What you'll do is you'll stake with a small staker, a small node, so that the network becomes more decentralized. So I think if you have a system like this, it is more secure because it is harder to attack. It's actually pretty impossible to attack. It's harder to profit from an attack, very importantly, so you remove the incentive. At the same time, it helps decentralize the network because instead of decentralization over time, we have every single holder with an incentive to decentralize the network, and they can actually help do so in a very simple way. And then there are, of course, other upsides, because if you don't have inflation, if you don't have fees, your coin becomes even more attractive, right? Like, do you want to hold a coin with 2% inflation or with 0% inflation, all things kept even? Do you want to pay 1 cent in fees, which is barely anything, but it adds up at scale? Or do you want to have zero fees? So I think by doing this, you actually make your coin more attractive, more secure, more decentralized, and more attractive. Yeah, so just summarizing for myself, and then I'll take questions. I think the incentives that we have now are very misaligned, and I think there's an increasingly big incentive to attack the coin. I think it's possible to attack the coin. I think you can profit from attacking the coin, both BCH and Bitcoin. I think the key issue is that proof of work is risky, and increasingly so. And I think that we need to either massively increase adoption, we need to do that anyway, or we need to consider moving to proof of stake. The exact version, you know, I'm not technical, but I think a version like I just talked about makes the most sense. But obviously we need to think about what actually would work for us. So with that said, I think that's my last slide. Yeah, I didn't want to mention my name again. So thank you for listening.
All right, here we go. We've got some very enthusiastic hands here.
So what I want to say is there are a lot of coins that are using proof of stake, whereas there are a lot of coins with tail emissions. Obviously, this wasn't right so far, as far as I understand. But we currently have only one coin, which is original Satoshi design. And if it was supposed to fail, we should let it fail on its merits. That's it. So I have nothing against trying to experiment with the new things, but I don't think it should be done on Bitcoin Cash.
Okay. I think that's fair, to be honest. To be honest, for me, it doesn't matter too much if it's Bitcoin Cash or any other coin. I would love it just if Bitcoin, for example, improved itself, just because I think that's the easiest way we get to global adoption. It's a far bigger battle for any unknown coin to get there. But yeah, I kind of agree with you that it will be hard, right? Like, many people like the way it is now and they want to let the experimenting to other chains. That, like, can only agree.
I want to thank you for the talk. I think it's very well stated, and it's considerations that are worth thinking about. I really think it's good. I just wanted to push back a little bit on one of the things you seem to sort of allude to, the fact that miners are disincentivized from the network, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I guess it would depend if they have alternatives on what else they can mine on with that same hardware. With Bitcoin, let's say, if they end up destroying the network, they're sitting on a huge pile of very expensive, useless hardware.
Yeah.
So in some sense, you could consider them actually aligned with the interests of the coin. I mean, they become much more successful if the coin succeeds, because their hardware is tied directly to that coin's algorithm, you know, like SHA-256. So, I mean, you know, that's also a consideration. Like, it's not, I mean, you maybe made the impression that they're completely just, you know, they're just going to extract value from the network and run away, whereas they're actually, like, physically invested. They bought buildings, they have employees, they have hardware that can become useless overnight. So, I mean, I think that's probably in their minds, too. I mean, that's part of their incentives, you know, where they wouldn't just collude to attack a coin unless it was maybe a competing algorithm of the same algorithm, and they could destroy that.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, so I just wanted to point that out.
So I largely agree. I think the payoff needs to be big enough for them to have it be worth it. Right. So if we look at these public miners, Marathon Digital Holdings, whatever they're called, like, their market cap is $5 billion. In that $5 billion is contained the value of their ASICs. It's like, it contains the future earnings that people expect them to have. If they can choose between keep mining Bitcoin and get $100 million in profits every year, most of them are actually not that profitable because they have to reinvest most again. So let's say they make $100 million a year, or they can completely burn the value of all their existing assets, but they have a one-time payout of $10 billion or $20 billion because of this short. Then in that case, I wouldn't care. Like, I will gladly burn down my house if you pay me $2 million, let's say. If you do this, you mean, as an attacker?
You're going to get found and you're going to get killed.
I don't think we should build our security on the assumption.
So yeah, true. I would like to present a scenario for his question, in which case it is not equivalent to burning down the house. And that is basically proof of work, hash rate works on the more efficient semiconductor you get. And right now, the United States government is spending a lot of money to keep the semiconductor dominance under the U.S. influence. Their aim is not, they're not thinking about proof of work or Bitcoin. They're thinking about AI, and they don't want the hostile nations to get access to AI. For this, they're willing to go to war with China over Taiwan so that they don't get access to that semiconductor. I believe what's going to happen in the future is that the largest hash rate on any proof of work chain will be under direct influence of U.S. government, in the sense the U.S. government will control through licensing which mining companies can get access to the most energy efficient semiconductors. When that happens, what's going to be is that not that they're going to burn down the chain, whether it's BTC, BCH, or any proof of work chain, but rather they're going to do something which they already did in the last 3 years, and that is they just confiscated hundreds of billions of dollars belonging to a world leader that they did not like. They can do the same thing. Some country has a lot of money, or some entity has a lot of money, and goes against the U.S. government, and they are going to actually ask you to freeze that account. And that's a hard fork of the chain, but all the hash rate will go into that chain, the stronger chain. And if needed, to continuously attack and 51% reorg the non-dominant chain. So they will destroy the non-dominant chain. Yeah. And they will continue with the dominant chain, where most people are fine because their chain, their account and everything still works. It's just that few people are censored, or, you know, everybody learns that gets a message to not mess with the U.S. government.
Yeah.
So that's a scenario in which it is financially completely valid for everybody who has this mining equipment to continually ban, censor, do all sorts of negative things on the activity, not burn down the chain, but still remain extremely profitable.
Okay. I think... yeah, it can make sense, that scenario. But I also think that would also kind of, like, if we come to a sort of public status where it's known that one government fully controls the chain, then I think that also pretty much kills Bitcoin, right?
I support proof of stake.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, I think I mostly agree with you. I think that's like another way in which this can go wrong.
So in the BTC community, there is... a sentiment of there's like the product, like the BitX, it's consumer grade mining hardware. There's like the whole mining for heat idea. I used to do that myself on an S9. So there's some non-monetary value that can be extracted from mining. I was using it to heat my room for a while, right? And it would offset my heating costs in the winter. It's cold in Michigan. So I'm just wondering about your thoughts on that. Do you think that in aggregate, consumer grade mining, especially as it becomes more efficient, can help mitigate these kind of issues?
I would like to think so, but I think not so much, to be honest, mostly because the bigger cost than just the energy cost is actually purchasing the ASICs. So if you run it in the winter to offset your heating cost, that's great, you know, but if you probably pay for your electricity in the summer, and it's like way more than that the big miners pay. So if you have to turn it off in summer because you're like, it's not profitable for me now with this electricity cost, because the miners have like 4 cents per kilowatt hour, I don't think any of us can match that pretty much. If you have to turn it off in summer and it's only profitable in winter, you're not going to recoup the investment on the ASICs. Like in almost every ASIC that, like I've looked at five, to be fair, you need to mine 24/7 with pretty low costs to be able to make it profitable. So turning it off for half the year, then you're just not profitable. You can still do it, of course. It's just more of a charity thing, which I don't think will scale enough to get to where we need.
Hi, Milan. Thank you so much for an interesting talk. It was very, very good. Yeah, I've got a couple of points, I guess, to rebuke or like some assumptions that are made that I think are flawed. And the one is to like to make the most money or to get this money, you're assuming
double mic.
Yeah, you're assuming the price of Bitcoin is very high. Mm-hmm. But to be able to get hold of that mining equipment, you have to go and start purchasing it aggressively. That's not going to happen. And also logistically, like get hold of it or move it or ship it. That's going to be incredibly difficult to keep on the lowdown. So as soon as like that happens, like, hey, look, like basically someone's going out and buying out all of these multi-billion pound companies and getting hold of their miners, the signal's already going to be there. Like something's going on here. And the price of Bitcoin will then naturally drop. And so the shorting potential with that automatically drops.
Yeah.
And so I think like this is and I think that whole logistical element is a sort of a little bit hand-waved here. Like the maths makes sense, but the logistics of that, and also, you know, trying to buy all of the miners at a certain point, you know, it's like supply and demand. The more you buy, the higher the price goes up, and at a certain point it will become exponential. Like it will, because so I see an issue there.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was my first point. Maybe sorry if you could answer that.
So I think you can start buying up miners. You can start, like, let's say the people behind Marathon Holding want to do this. They already have a pretty big miner. They can just keep buying more and more. And it makes sense, right? We see these mergers happening. So, like, what's not to say it's already happening? These miners, there's just a few big miners, to be honest, that keep getting bigger. It could already be their plan to do this. It's just a sort of long con that they're doing. If you want to do it in the short term and you start buying up that many ASICs, and you think the price will decrease, you can also just open the short as soon as you start buying up, right? Because then, okay, great, you're buying up these miners, price goes down, I can bid even more for these ASICs. So I do think like it is hand wavy, I agree, to just say, yes, you can buy up all of these miners. But also they're public companies. Like if you make a tender offer for many of these, like it's not that hard. Yes, we can assume some premium on it, but like the worst part actually is, to me, for the miners themselves, this can start to make sense. Because as their revenue, as their profit decreases, what do they want to do? They just want to, you know, make a lot of money. So for them, it might actually make sense to just perform this attack themselves.
So I think, yeah, that argument there, I can shoot that exact back. So one of the solutions that's proposed is to go to proof of stake. And the great thing about proof of work is it's a continuous tug of war. So if you get 51%, that's not static. So someone else can basically buy some more miners or turn on their miners that have been turned off and increase on that. And the thing is with proof of stake is once someone has that 51%, then it's over, right? They have that power and you can't buy more Nano unless they sell it. And so you're talking about the long con. Maybe they're already doing that. Maybe that would already happen with proof of stake. Maybe that's already in all of the coins that are using proof of stake, using, for example, Nano, because of the unfair distribution, which I would also say is a critical element of sound money for the world, is the fair distribution, which proof of stake doesn't offer. But you have proof of stake. Maybe that is already happened. The CIA or whichever free-lending agency has already got the majority stake. So at a certain point, because they bought that for peanuts, because Nano price is, of course, peanuts, right? And then at a certain point, if by all God, you know, something happens and you do an amazing job and Nano becomes this amazing thing or any other proof of stake money, then they can launch that attack because it's part of the long game. So what? How would you counter that? How would you? Because that argument you're using against proof of work can be used exactly against proof of stake.
Right. So I would say that is a very long con, of course, that they're playing. So let's say you wanted to buy up 51% of Nano early on. You would have probably already increased the price a fair bit, but let's say you kept it relatively low, right? You bought it up over time. Now, Nano has the market cap of Bitcoin, 2,000 billion, whatever. And they decide this is the time we're going to attack. First of all, they are burning down about $1 trillion in value because they are the biggest entity on the network. They hold most of their value in the network. So we first of all have to assume that they are an actor who does not care about profit, which I think is already a stronger defense than having actors that want to make a profit able to attack your chain. So
what's the enemy of P2P currency?
Governments, I assume.
Governments, and who else?
Banks.
Right, and what sort of a market cap is $2 trillion to them? In terms of profit, to burn that sort of, you know, the money that would have cost to have bought Nano, which would have been pennies, even if you're talking about millions, but to save that ecosystem that they have. How much value is in the entire cash market and fiat market?
But you're making very odd assumptions here, I think, because if you're willing to spend $1 trillion to attack a chain, you can easily do that with proof of work now. Like most of the calculations we do show more like $50 billion. If you are willing to burn $1 trillion to attack, proof of work is still weaker. It's still easier to get enough ASICs to attack proof of work than it is proof of stake. Also, I think it's a big assumption to think they managed to buy 51% in every proof of stake network early on. And I also want to add, for Bitcoin Cash, you could have your fair distribution and have proof of stake, right? Let's say Bitcoin Cash switches to proof of stake now. We don't have to redo distribution. Distribution has happened. So if you like the distribution, you can just say, cool, we move to proof of stake now. So unless you also think that they bought 51% of all Bitcoin Cash, thinking maybe at some point they go to proof of stake and then I can attack, which I think is like, we're getting into very, very long cons here, yes. I think.
We're going to have to wrap this up and move on, but just a couple of final points I want to make. Firstly, I think it's great to have these kind of discussions here. And I also think it's in a sense ironic because in the BCH world, we actually don't have much clout in the mining space as a result of our lower hash rate. You know, mining is not well represented here and stuff. And ironically, it is the BCH community who are hashing this out, trying to get to the bottom of it. And in, you know, as it happens every time, the BTC guys will wake up and will already be shipping the solutions.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. It's important we have those discussions. I mean, I think from the BCH community, a lot of the thinking is it's just drive the adoption or go to zero. And I think people do have that mentality in there. They're okay with that. And one other final thing I want to throw in, you might want to comment on, is the idea that with quantum coming in, one of the proposals on the BTC side is for a thing called Hourglass, which would like basically drip feed the unsecure quantum coins in by allowing miners to only grab like one block of quantum unsecured coins over, you know, per unit time. So that essentially gives you like a fresh batch of emission,
yep,
without suffering the inflation and without having a huge shock on the market as an immediate result. So maybe that buys more time, you know, than we would expect to have, you know, if there's, let's say, 2 to 3 million unsecured, yep, coins.
I think it was 6 million when someone looked it up yesterday. Yeah. So I think two things on it. So first of all, BCH hashing this out instead of BTC, I think is quite typical, right? But I also think, like, what we are talking about here is getting massive adoption. Is what does it take to get BCH to that global adoption that we want to see? And then we also have to think, like, into the future, because if we want to get to massive adoption, we have to be secure. So I think also for BCH, despite this being a bigger issue for BTC, this is key to me anyway. And then the other, the quantum emission schedule. To me, that's sort of the same as a till emission, right? Except instead of freshly minted coins, you just do it with like coins we assume lost. But it still comes down to the same thing, because those coins are assumed lost right now. If you let those re-enter the circulation, you just have the same inflation that you would have with a till emission. So I would say, yes, it's sort of a solution, but it comes with the same downsides as till emission to me.
At least in the short term, yes. Anyway, everyone can hash this out on Twitter afterwards. I'm sure it'll be a popular topic. Hands together for Milan.
Thank you.